This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. And now, alternative programming on HD 2 and 3. KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Belinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Lavinka.
And Glenn Holt. And tonight on Queer Voices, we have J.D. Doyle's monthly Queer Music Heritage in our second hour. But first, Equality Texas held its annual Lobby Day at the state capitol a few weeks ago. Equality Texas board member Terry Preston will join us to discuss the results of that event and any new state legislation that may affect our community. Then in News Wrap, what?
A wrap-up of the session.
What's that?
We're doing a wrap-up of the Texas legislative session.
Oh, okay.
And Daniel Williams is with us.
Okay, so ignore what's on the website. In News Wrap, the U.S. House of Representatives has passed an annual defense spending bill with three amendments designed to at least impede the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The GOP-controlled Minnesota legislature has approved a proposition for next year's ballot that would constitutionally define marriage as exclusively heterosexual. And Tennessee's Republican governor has signed a bill preventing local cities and counties from enacting anti-bias protections that exceed those specified in the state law. That's followed by the feature segments from This Way Out, an interview with iconic lesbian writer Jane Anderson, and an interview with Canadian country singer K.D. Lang. At 10 o'clock, it's J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, focusing tonight on straight artists' queer songs of the 1970s. It's a continuation of last month's program, which looked at the 1960s. Tonight's music came from the era after Stonewall, so queer folks and their music were more out of the closet then. And Jennifer is laughing so hard that she's crying.
No. Just, I've done the same thing. You know, we let you go off for a week and you come back. You just missed a few things. Like updating our schedule.
Yeah, really.
Well, we have a lot to talk about of the legislative session, which is closing tonight, but there's a good chance that a new one will be called for tomorrow because they haven't solved all the problems with the budget. So let's do a quick break with music, and we'll have Daniel Williams in here.
Together, fighting for our love. You and me.
Kind of sounds to me like that was a remake or a cover of the original version of Why. That was by Twinkle U, it was by Small Town Boy from the album Twinkle U. And again, the name of the song was Why. This is Queer Voices.
Well, it is that time of the year, or every other year, where the legislative session has wrapped. Well, has it officially wrapped up?
It has officially wrapped up. Both the House and Senate have adjourned what's called sine die.
Speaking to Daniel Williams, who has been our watchdog this season and has done an incredible job. And his blog, which is Legislative Query, has been fabulous on covering. So let's go to before we get into our community stuff, let's talk about where they are.
Well, both the House and Senate have adjourned, as I said, sine die, which is the Texas pronunciation of a Latin phrase that means without a day. It's what they do at the end of the session. Today's the 140th day of the session, so at the end they adjourn without a set day to come back. Now, that said, it's broadly accepted that they'll actually be back tomorrow morning. And there was an announcement on the Senate floor that they would be back at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. There were several key pieces of legislation that didn't get finished before the 140-day clock ran out, and it's expected that Governor Perry will call the legislature back for a special session to finish those. Now, as of about an hour ago, that hadn't happened yet. That may have happened since I left home to come to the station, but we will almost certainly have a special session, and it will almost certainly start tomorrow. The state constitution allows the governor to call a special session if for emergent issues or for, in this case, leftover legislation.
Like the budget.
Although the budget actually passed. The budget passed on Saturday.
Okay.
The budget passed on Saturday, but there is another piece of legislation that accompanies the budget. It's what's called a fiscal matters bill. In particular, there's one that encompasses the how funds are distributed to fund public education, both secondary and university education, did not get passed. It was in SB 1811, Senate Bill 1811. It's been broadly criticized for massive cuts. It cuts $4 billion in education spending out of the public school funding. And Senator Wendy Davis from the Fort Worth area filibustered the bill until past midnight last night. Now, the rules require that today, the last day, the 140th day, only technical corrections can be made to bills, and it requires a four-fifths of senators to overturn that rule, or 25 senators, 25 of the 31 senators. That was not reached today. They adjourned without bringing up 1811, which effectively forces a special session. There's another key piece of legislation regarding Texas windstorm insurance that was not passed as well. Texas is an insurer of last resort for a number of people along the coast in hurricane-prone areas that can't get windstorm insurance otherwise. The legislation that would renew that program did not pass, so that has got to be brought up as well. Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst has submitted 12 items to the governor suggesting that they be included in the special session. And this is one of the scary things about special session. During regular session, there are rules upon rules that slow the process down and ensure public input. For instance, committees, before they hold a hearing, have to announce that they're holding a hearing, and then they have to wait 5 days to have the hearing.
Do they always go by those rules, though?
During regular session, for the most part, yes. Any rule can be set aside, depending on which rule it is. It may require two-thirds of the people to agree, or three-fourths, or the whole process is crazy. But during special session, none of those rules are there. So the process can go very quickly. And there have been special sessions that have lasted less than 4 hours.
Really?
Okay. Additionally, the Senate has a practice of requiring two-thirds of the senators to agree before a vote can be brought up for a bill can be brought up for a vote. During special session, that practice is not in place. So in that case, the 12 Democratic senators in the Senate cannot block bills. It takes a simple majority. The Republicans have a simple majority and can bring up any bill they want. So the process goes faster, and it's harder to block bills. we're going to have to watch this really carefully. The 12 items that Dewhurst submitted to the governor include some really out there things, including a provision that would create a crime for screeners at airports who conduct invasive pat-downs.
Right, and that would probably mean that we would have no air traffic in Texas from outside the state.
That's what the federal government has said if that passes, but Dewhurst would like the governor to include it on a special call. And that's one of the other things about special sessions is that they're limited to only the topics for which the governor has called them. Now, he can call that for anything, but what's expected is windstorm insurance and education funding. Hmm. Other things that might be included include the so-called Sanctuary Cities Bill that would require local police enforcement to do really massive background screenings on immigration status for everyone, and a lot of people are afraid could
act
lead
as
to
ICE agents.
Exactly, and a lot of people are afraid could lead to...
Without funding from the state or the federal government.
Exactly, and completely unfunded. The congressional redistricting has also not been passed in the session. That's likely to be on the special session call.
So the other redistricting, the other three have been passed.
Yes, yes. It's only the congressional redistricting that's on Dewhurst's call.
So that's the state senate, the state reps, and the board of education.
Correct.
Are those going to be possibly challenged?
Certainly. They will absolutely be challenged with the Department of Justice. There have already been complaints filed by both Harold Dutton and Garnett Coleman. I believe there's also been complaints out of several of the Fort Worth area legislators to the Senate map.
Okay. So let's focus now on the issues of the GLBT community.
Well, everybody else got screwed this session, but we actually made out really, really
Unless you were transgender.
Actually, the trans community made out really well this session.
How did we do on that?
Well, let's start with what passed. We had three bills that were backed by the LGBT community that passed. Two anti-bullying bills, Garnett Coleman's HB 1386, which is primarily aimed at providing tools to counter teen suicide, and Diane Patrick's HB 1942, which is an amalgamation of several anti-bullying bills that were filed.
But is the LGBT community actually mentioned in those bills?
Not explicitly. No, they are not. That said, these bills will do good. They will benefit LGBT students. They are good bills. They're waiting for the governor's signature. The governor has 30 days to sign them. If he doesn't sign them within the 30 days, they become law anyway. He can also veto the bill within that 30 days. That's not expected. The veto is the governor's really only tool for influencing legislation. So Perry tends to telegraph his vetoes out way in advance to encourage members of the legislature to change their legislation in his favor. Mm-hmm. Those are not expecting any opposition. In addition, HB 2229 by Garnett Coleman passed, which makes permanent the state's HIV medication advisory committee.
Okay. Oh, yeah, they were going to let that expire.
It did expire, actually.
Yes. That's right. Commissioner, you told us last time.
The commissioner allowed it to expire in January, and public outcry forced him to put it back in place. Mm. But as the laws currently stand, the commissioner can simply allow it to expire again. HB 2229 puts that committee in statute so that only the legislature can disband them. So it's a real step forward for community input in the state's HIV programs.
But have they funded HIV medication?
Not at the rate it needs to be, but they haven't cut it, which is huge. Some of the initial drafts of the budget had the state's HIV medication assistance program completely eliminated, and it wasn't. It was funded at current levels, which isn't enough. But it's still there. In addition, they gave the state health commissioner the ability to request more funds from the comptroller if they're available and if he feels they're necessary for the program.
Wow. That is great.
Exactly.
Considering what we were talking about a month ago.
Now, getting back to what you were talking about, the trans community, right. We had some really bad bills filed this session. In particular, SB 723 in the Senate, which would have effectively outlawed opposite sex marriage for anyone who's legally had their legally recognized sex changed. It was defeated. Amazingly. Now, that thing popped on and off the Senate schedule for a month. And here's how we beat it. Every time the author, Tommy Williams of the Woodlands, put the bill on the schedule for the Senate, senators' phones went crazy. I talked to a friend of mine who is a staffer for one of the Senate Democrats. She said it took her 2 hours one morning to take all the messages off the phone that had arrived over the night. And that's how we win. We win when we talk to legislators.
Because I remember all of that. Every time that came up, I got all of the alerts from Equality Texas and from other individuals sending me out, you know.
Well, and that's what's amazing. Equality Texas, HRC, Get Equal, Equality Across America, the Transgender Foundation of America, the Texas Transgender Education Network. Dozens, literally dozens of organizations were speaking with one voice to their constituents saying, call your senator and tell them to oppose SB 723. When has that ever happened? When have all of these organizations that represent our community spoken with one voice? And when has our community spoken with one voice? The defeat of that bill is a pattern for how we need to act when legislation affects our community. And I am incredibly proud of what we've done there.
How did it affect the Republicans there in the Senate? I mean, you know, how did they react to it? They got their ears boxed a couple of times.
I think they were
the guy
surprised.
Tommy Williams in the wood.
I think was particularly surprised that there was any organized opposition. In fact, when the bill was heard in committee, he hadn't even arranged for someone to come and testify for it. Every person who showed up to testify on that bill was testifying against it, and I think he was a little shocked. Incredibly glad that that bill has died. Additionally, we've had some other bad legislation that died as well. HCR 110 by Workman would have instructed President Obama to fully enforce the so-called Defensive Marriage Act. It died in committee. HB 2638 by the notorious Warren Chisholm would have massively expanded the ability of the Texas Attorney General to interfere in same-sex divorce cases. It died in committee. Amendment 143 to HB 1 by Christian out of Center, which would sought to defund campus LGBT resource centers in Texas universities, was removed from the budget. It passed from the House. The Senate removed it. It's not on there. All of this really horrible legislation aimed at our community died, and we were able to pass 3 good bills that, while they do not specifically include the LGBT community, will still benefit the community.
That's pretty incredible when you look at how the legislative is made up of, that there's a supermajority of Republicans in the House,
mm-hmm.
and there's a majority of the Republicans in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Was that because of organization?
I think it's a combination of things. The defeat of SB 723, the anti-trans marriage bill, is absolutely the result of organization mm-hmm. on the part of our community. I think some of the good legislation that got passed is a combination of good organizing, in particular on the part of Equality Texas, who has done some incredible work this session, but also that Republicans have started to shift their attacks away from the queer community and towards the Hispanic community. If you look at polls that have been coming out, a majority of Americans now support recognizing same-sex relationships. That mm-hmm. number is also climbing up within the state of Texas. And Republicans are starting to recognize that when they're making those attacks, they're attacking their constituents, brothers and daughters and family members and loved ones. And they're not as effective as they used to be.
Well, it's interesting because isn't it still considered that the Texas legislature is more rule-based? I mean, that's definitely going away, but there's still a lot of voices out there in the rural areas who think they have no queer people in there as constituents.
But that's one of the things that's changing, and that's some of the marvelous organizing that's being done by groups like Equality Texas in encouraging Texans to contact their reps, in particular if their representatives are virulent homophobes. And I always say this, it is not enough to be out to your family, it is not enough to be out to your friends, to be out to your clergy person. We must come out to our lawmakers.
Exactly, what Harvey Milk always said.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, I'm really impressed. I'm really impressed that we've... And we don't expect any of the stuff to creep up in the special session.
The one thing I would be concerned about is Wayne Christian's anti-LGBT campus resource center bill. As I said earlier, special sessions are strictly limited to
yes.
the issues for which the governor calls them. And so amendments to those bills can only be added if they're dealing with the topic the bill deals with. Most of the bad legislation we've seen hasn't been dealing with windstorm insurance or congressional redistricting, although certainly there's some horrible legislation there, but not aimed at the LGBT community. However, Christian's amendments have to do with funding for secondary education and Texas universities, which is one of the items that is almost certain to show up on the governor's call for special session. So there is some fear that he may attempt to amend whatever legislation comes in to either defund LGBT resource centers on campuses, which is what he did to HB 1. There's another amendment that he had pre-filed to a bill that didn't wind up coming up that would have prohibited those resource centers from being housed on campus.
Right.
That's also a fear that that might get introduced.
Yes.
Now, at the same time, there's an amendment that Garnett Coleman offered for the last three legislative sessions. It passed in the 80th, it passed in the 81st, it did not pass this session in the 82nd, that would prohibit discrimination on the basis of age, race, sex, gender, national origin, ability, sexual orientation, or gender identity and expression for Texas schools that receive state funds.
Right.
He's passed it for two sessions in the House. He didn't pass it in this session. In previous sessions, the Senate always removed it. But with public education funding being the topic on hand, that amendment would also be germane. So it cuts both ways.
Interesting. So, as you really complimented Equality Texas, and you're sort of part of them, I guess, in a way.
I did some contract work for them around Lobby Day, but I am not an employee of Equality Texas, nor do I represent them in any official capacity.
Well, and I think it also should be noted that compared to many of the other lobbying groups, Equality Texas is incredibly small and underfunded.
Fantastically small. If you compare them to Equality California, which as far as the size of the state's concerned is probably the most comparable organization, their budget is less than a tenth of Equality California's. And from what I've been seeing from my friends in the lobbying community, people are amazed at what Equality Texas has been able to accomplish this session. So I can only imagine what they could do if they actually had a budget.
Well, right, and they're also the fact that the cards are stacked against them.
Incredibly so.
Yes, yes.
But the folks over there have just done tireless, tireless work. And the support of the community is what made it possible. And I want to say that 1,000 times. You can hire a professional lobbyist, which Equality Texas does not do, but the thing that affects lawmakers the most is when their constituents call and say, I'm your constituent, I'm a voter, and this is what I need from you.
And one of the things that Randall Ellis said, who was part of Equality Texas and now works for Legacy, is that when you call your representative, state your name, your phone number, state what you want to do, but at the end of the call, before you hang up, ask them to repeat your name and phone number.
Absolutely.
And I love that because I'm sort of on the other side of that in the city government. And we do that. We do take names and numbers
that
people will give that, but sometimes they don't in other offices.
Right. And when I was a staffer for a legislative office, that when someone called, I wrote down name and I wrote down number. And at the end of the day, it went on a list and that went to the rep.
Right. Right. Now, the congressional redistricting, is it, well, they may not even touch that and let the courts do it?
That's to be seen. It's likely to wind up on the call for special session, but pretty much everyone involved with the process agrees that at the end of the day, the Department of Justice is going to be who draws that map. And it was really interesting during the House debate on the House redistricting, every good amendment that got offered was countered with, well, why even bother? The Department of Justice is going to draw the map anyway. It's likely to be on the special session call. It's likely to be voted on and brought out. We'll be watching it carefully. It's important to pay attention to those things. At the end of the day, the Department of Justice will likely be the people drawing that map.
And I think the fight over it was there's four new seats, and the logic said that two would be drawn in Democratic areas and two would be drawn in Republicans.
Oh, no. The maps that were circulating split things left and right. You had districts that were stretching for hundreds and hundreds of miles. There was one district that started out in the valley and wound up in Austin. And, I mean, they were gerrymandering that thing all over the place, which is why it didn't pass, because it was a really heated debate when you start drawing lines like that.
Okay, so this work? Do we have to be, you know, I know you're talking about the education bill where we might have to watch out for LGBT resource centers. Other than that, can we take a breath, or do we still need to sort of watch what's going on?
We have to remain vigilant, in particular because special sessions move so quickly. We don't have the lead-out time for action alerts, so pay attention to your email. If you're not already, get on your favorite LGBT organization's action list, be that Equality Texas or HRC or the Transgender Education Network of Texas. There are a number of them. Hey, get on all of them. Pay attention to those during special session. Things are going to move very, very quickly.
Were there any other items that were of significance that you wanted to cover in just about 15 seconds?
Well, I could sit here and talk about the legislature for hours and hours, but I do want to mention my
website. Well, we'll have a special session and have you back.
I do want to mention my website. That's legislativequery.com, query with two E's. You can also follow me on Twitter and on Facebook.
Okay. Daniel, thank you for keeping us up to date.
Of course.
Previously, we used to have to call Austin, but it's so nice to have somebody here in Houston that not only is local, but also does an incredible job.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Professional writers rewrite. And what I do when I have a new play is I'm ruthless about my own work, and you can't hold on to everything you've written, because usually the first draft is lousy.
It's not worth it to me to have a successful career as someone else. I would rather have a really minimal career and be myself.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Pride marchers meet mayhem in Moscow backstage with out multi-platform playwright Jane Anderson, and Katie Lang speaks candidly about her music, love, and life. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Ben Caron.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 28, 2011. Dozens of activists trying to hold LGBT pride marches in Moscow were attacked by ultranationalists and religious fundamentalists on May 28th before police moved in to make several arrests on both sides. Even though the European Court of Human Rights ruled in October that previous bans of peaceful pride marches going back to 2006 were illegal, Moscow authorities again rejected applications for this year's march, claiming that they threatened public order. According to various media reports, some 18 LGBT activists and 14 right-wing opponents were arrested in the Russian capital and taken to local police stations. Some prominent foreign human rights activists joined the aborted marches, one at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier outside the Kremlin, and then later outside the mayor's office. France's Louis-Georges Tan, who virtually single-handedly created IDAHO, the International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia, Chicago-based activist Andy Thayer, and U.S. military activist Lieutenant Dan Choi were each wrestled to the ground by security forces and subjected to rough arrests. Choi tweeted extensively while in custody to report that Tao had initially been placed in isolation for refusing to stop singing the Toreador song from Bizet's Carmen, and Choi said he was briefly isolated after repeatedly chanting Discriminatia.
British activist Peter Tatchell was also in Moscow to show his support, but escaped arrest. He said in a statement that he had to run down side streets and alleyways to avoid being targeted and beaten by Pride opponents. Moscow's leading activist, Nikolai Alexeyev, was not among the Pride participants. He was reported to have badly injured his leg after storming off the set of Russia's most popular political TV program on May 26th, after accusing the program's producers of stacking the panel and live audience with homophobes. Choi tweeted that Alexeyev was recovering in a safe but undisclosed location. He subsequently reported that foreigners had all been released, but that Russian LGBT activists would probably be kept in jail overnight. There were no serious injuries reported as a result of the melees and arrests. And demonstrating that humor is the best medicine, Choi tweeted soon after his release that, "This has been my favorite Pride march yet."
Organizers canceled what would have been the first Pride parade in Montenegro's capital, Podgorica, on May 31st after a concert on May 17th in observance of the International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia was tear-gassed by what the European Parliament's Intergroup on LGBT Rights called anti-gay hooligans. Their report on the incident said that about half the audience dispersed and that some people required medical attention. MEP Ulrika Lunacek, co-president of the Intergroup, said in a statement that, "As Montenegro further progresses as a candidate to join the European Union, all its citizens must be protected and respected by authorities. Respect, protection, and promotion of minority rights," added Jelko Kacin, the vice chair of the European Parliament's delegation to Southeast Europe, "are a quintessential part of our common European values."
LGBT people in Belarus opened their first equality festival at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Minsk on May 14th. About 100 people attended, including some foreign diplomats. And while organizers' applications to stage a march were rejected by city authorities, two groups of activists held marches anyway on May 17th, the International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia. According to local reports, police stopped one march and arrested 15 people, who were then released soon thereafter. In the other action, several activists marched in central Minsk for 10 minutes with rainbow flags and a mock coffin to symbolize the death of freedom of assembly. Police arrived at the march's endpoint and confiscated the coffin and other items, but there were no arrests.
A small group of fundamentalist Australian Christians tried to disrupt a marriage equality march in Brisbane, Queensland, on May 21st by using bullhorns to shout homophobic abuse. The Brisbane Times reported that a scuffle between the two groups broke out, allegedly when members of the small Christian minority tried to snatch same-sex marriage placards and flags from marchers' hands. According to the report, there were no arrests, and no one was seriously injured. Equal Love March organizer Kat Henderson told the newspaper that it was four people when we had 400 people. I guess it highlighted the importance to keep us fighting for gay marriage. There was a similar incident the previous weekend when a small group of Christian counter-protesters shouted, "God hates sinners," over a loudspeaker at about 150 marriage equality marchers in Adelaide, South Australia. Police broke up scuffles between the two opposing groups, although no arrests or injuries were reported. The march went ahead, capped by a wedding ceremony outside of the Parliament building for 10 same-gender couples.
Elsewhere, the Church of Scotland, that country's largest Protestant denomination, has allowed the appointment of some openly gay or lesbian pastors, but there will be a further study on opening the ministry to all lesbian and gay applicants. Following 6 hours of debate at the Church's General Assembly meeting in Edinburgh this week, a moratorium on out ministers, imposed in 2009 after the Reverend Scott Rennie became the denomination's first openly gay partnered minister, was lifted. The Assembly decided that any openly gay clergy members who were ordained before 2009 can be appointed as pastors, and that any closeted clergy members can come out without penalty. But it approved a study due in 2013 on whether to ordain out lesbian or gay candidates in the future and whether to allow pastors to bless same-gender unions. According to London's Guardian newspaper, the Reverend Andrew Coghill, a leading conservative, likened the acceptance of gay clergy to a hand grenade, saying, "We're being asked to pull the pin out, and it will blow the church apart." But South African-born minister Willem Beswi Denhout said that discrimination against gay clergy members reminded him of the use of the Bible to justify apartheid, adding that, "Some of the gay Christians I know will be much better Christians than I will ever be."
But to no one's surprise, the Republican-controlled U.S. House of Representatives approved the nation's annual defense spending bill this week with three amendments, all opposed by the Obama administration, designed to impede repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the Pentagon policy requiring lesbian and gay service members to stay closeted. One amendment would require the four service branch chiefs to additionally sign off on repeal. The legislation passed in December already requires the President, Defense Secretary, and Joint Chiefs Chair to do that. A second amendment affirms that the Defense of Marriage Act, which bans federal recognition of legally performed same-gender unions, applies to all Defense Department policies, and the third prohibits weddings for same-gender couples at military facilities. The House approved the bill, with those amendments, by a vote of 322-96. Some Democrats voted with the majority. It's unlikely that the amendments will survive in the Senate, however, which is narrowly controlled by the Democrats. But equality advocates are urging opponents of the amendments to contact their senators. Service Members Legal Defense Network Executive Director Aubrey Sarvis said in a statement that, "We need to beat back this harmful language and make sure it does not survive in conference committee."
Also as expected, Minnesota's House of Representatives voted 70-62 this week to place a referendum on the November 2012 ballot to amend the state constitution to define marriage as exclusively heterosexual. The Senate, also controlled by Republicans, had already passed the measure. Equality activists are predicting an expensive political campaign during the next 18 months, marked by ugly assertions by the measure's supporters. Jason Adkins, executive director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, told the Associated Press that Minnesota for Marriage would be a joint venture of Roman Catholic and evangelical churches and other religious and secular groups. He said they plan to conduct the largest and most intensive grassroots political campaign the state has ever seen.
And Tennessee's Republican Governor Bill Haslam signed a bill into law this week, also as expected, to ban cities and counties from enacting anti-discrimination legislation that doesn't already exist in state laws. The action came in response to an ordinance passed by lawmakers in Nashville requiring the city to only do business with companies that do not discriminate against LGBT people. Tennessee has no laws banning bias based on sexual orientation or gender identity or expression. A lawsuit testing the constitutionality of the state's anti-bias measure is reportedly in the works.
But Nevada's Republican governor, Brian Sandoval, signed legislation this week to ban workplace bias based on gender identity or expression. The law takes effect on October 1st and says businesses with more than 15 employees cannot discriminate against people based on their gender identity or expression, and that people cannot be refused work or fired simply because they are transgender. According to the Advocate, Nevada is home to an estimated 25,000 transgender people.
And finally, LGBT pride accidentally proliferated in Afghanistan, for a short time anyway. According to the London-based Guardian newspaper, local media in Kabul reported on a large number of rainbow stickers seen on the bumpers of several cars on the streets of the capital city. But when the Guardian sent a reporter to talk with drivers about declaring their support for LGBT rights, none understood why they were being asked that question. The rainbow stickers had first arrived on secondhand cars imported from Canada, the Guardian explained. Afghans had simply assumed that the color combination was the latest fashion fad in the West and duly adopted it. The newspaper said that drivers removed the rainbow stickers en masse following the local media reports about what they represented. One commentator even expressed the hope, the Guardian added, that the embarrassing incident would serve as a cautionary tale, warning Afghans against their tendency to blindly follow fashions imported from elsewhere.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 28, 2011. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride. Read the text of this week's News Wrap online at thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Ben Caron.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
An iconic ingenue sings it loud later in the program, after we go behind the scenes with one of the theater world's best-known out playwrights, who's also won raves for her TV work. This Way Out's Ben Caron has our backstage pass.
Recently, I sat down in studio to speak with Jane Anderson, an award-winning out writer and director for theater, film, and television. Her plays have been produced off-Broadway and in theaters around the country. She's written for numerous television shows, including the critically acclaimed Mad Men. And she's recently finished a run of her new play, The Escort, at the Geffen Playhouse in Los Angeles. I began by asking Jane about her varied experiences in writing, especially in writing for television, as she's mainly known as a playwright. Jane explained why she's chosen to write across multiple mediums.
It's great training to be on staff on a TV series because it makes your work less precious. I had just come from New York City. This was, the early 80s, and I was a theater person, and I was very serious about myself as an artist, and of course I didn't want to do a lot of rewriting because everything that came out of my mind was just so brilliant, and it was fabulous for me to be thrown on staff. The head writer said, all right, I want you to write a scene for Tootie and Kim and blah, blah, blah. Write it. I'm going to throw you in the room with another writer. We wrote it, showed it. Nah, this doesn't work. This doesn't work. Rewrite it. And what that did, it shook up my notion of what it is to truly be a professional writer. Professional writers rewrite. And what I do when I have a new play is I'm ruthless about my own work. And you have to be as a playwright. You can't hold on to everything you've written, because usually the first draft is lousy, let's be honest. I had written about four drafts before we even got to the first rehearsal. And then during rehearsal, as I listened to the actors struggle through the material, I can see what works, what doesn't work, and I rewrite more.
Besides being a playwright, Jane is also a mother, raising her teenage son, Rafi, with her partner of many years. Jane's recent play touches on motherhood, and I asked Jane to speak about the challenges of raising a son in a two-mother household.
You know, as a little boy, you're in love with your mom, right? And your mom is a goddess, and you cuddle, and you do all that. And as you come into your sexual maturity, you have to individuate. Whether you're gay or straight, you have to establish this precedent that you are an independent person, and especially you're an independent male person. And I get that. And I love watching that in my son. I love watching him become his own person, especially he's growing up in a household with two mothers. And God, that's just dreadful. Rafi is a deeply macho. He was just born straight. He is so heterosexual. You know, we're all of a continuum. We're all on a gradient of masculine and feminine, and we got this guy who is just so masculine but has such a tender heart. And we joke a lot about what it's like for him to be in a household with two lesbians. And he has a lot of good men in his life to guide him in that respect. But he has to hold his own, I think, more than most guys, because strong women won't allow a boy to be a sexist.
I wondered if, as an out playwright, Jane felt any pressure to write specifically about LGBT characters or on LGBT themes, or if she writes about whatever speaks to her as an individual.
Oh, I write whatever speaks to me, absolutely. In fact, if anybody ever pressures me for political or social reasons to write something, I just freeze up. That's just the nature of being an artist. If you're told you have to write something, you don't want to do it. So I just write what interests me. My last play, The Quality of Life, was about death. And all those characters were straight as well. And I wrote that because I had a lot of friends dying of cancer. I wanted to lighten up the topic and find my way through that. So I don't know if I'll write another gay play. Who knows?
Historically, Jane's been known to be a very interactive playwright who oftentimes engages in talkbacks with her audience after her shows. I asked her why she seeks out this dialogue with her audience.
I like teaching, you know. I want to hear what people are thinking. I'm deliberately not using the talk back as a dramaturgical lesson. Because when random people are put in a room and given an opportunity to talk, they'll say a lot of crazy stuff. So as a writer, I can't listen to it, but just as an observer, I really enjoy watching people's reactions.
And finally, I asked Jane about the prospects of moving her recent play to New York.
You know, there's a terrible prejudice in New York against Los Angeles playwrights, because they think because we also take part in the entertainment industry that we're not very good writers. But the fact is, it makes us even more skilled. And I hope, I keep trying to break that glass ceiling, that glass wall between the West Coast and the East Coast, and hopefully the Escort's going to make it back east, finally, and have a real life there as well.
It was such a pleasure to have Jane Anderson in the studio speaking with us. Jane's wonderful plays are available at bookstores across the country and online, and if you hear that one of her plays is being produced in your area, you should definitely go, because Jane's writing never disappoints. For This Way Out, I'm Ben Caron.
Hi, I'm Cleve Jones, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. An informed community is a strong community.
Singer crooned her way into being practically a musical genre unto herself. K.D. Lang opened up about the singular journey she's been on with Rosie Wilby during Rosie's Out in South London program on Resonance FM.
I read an interview in G3 magazine where you were talking about how you're sort of quite relieved the focus is a bit now less on your sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Has that come as quite a relief as well?
Well, in a way, it's kind of freed me up to embrace it again. You know, I think on this stuff, I'm fairly butch. I'm really portraying a lot of my butchness and embracing it. And I, in a kind
you
of
mean
really
musically or in how you present the image?
The image, I guess, musically a little bit, but you know, music I think transcends all of that.
Yeah.
I mean the sort of the clothes and the way I am on stage, mm-hmm. which is kind of fun because. You know, I always kind of go contrasting. I always try to balance, you know, so if the focus is really on my sexuality, I'll pull way away from it. And yeah. When people aren't paying attention to it,
then you'll
smack you in the face with it. I just the way I am, I guess.
Absolutely. And I read that you said you thought Ingenue wouldn't have been a hit had you not come out. Do you think that's really true?
I do. I think it wouldn't have been as big a hit for sure.
Mm, you think it really made a difference at the time?
Yeah, I think so.
And are you sort of proud to have been a gay icon and, I mean, inspired so many kind of gay women? I mean, like myself, I listened to Ingenue as a confused student.
I think if I had any positive impact, then certainly I'm proud of it. There's so many cogs in the wheel. You know, I was thinking about people who preceded me, who was like Martina Navratilova and before that, you know, maybe Billie Jean and
but not many. I mean, there really haven't been many women, and still a lot of actresses I know say it's a career killer, you know, to come out, which I thought was why it was interesting that for you, you felt it really.
Yeah, well, I'm not portraying any straight girls.
Well,
so,
no.
So it doesn't really, I mean, and you know, I just kind of went, okay, what? I mean, I'm not gonna, it's not worth it
to me to have a successful career as someone else. I would rather have a really, like, minimal career and be myself. So, I don't know. I understand why actresses don't want to come out, because they do have to... They
play straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also think that it's going to take one bold person that breaks that mold, too.
And you'll be touring live soon. Mm-hmm. How do you sort of keep the old songs that you must have done a million times feeling really fresh and new to you?
I don't sing them if I don't like them.
Do you feel, oh, I've gone off that one? And
yeah, definitely.
And rest them.
Yeah, I rest them. Put them out to pasture for a while. If I'm not feeling it, I just definitely just don't do it.
Yeah.
This tour, though, is a lot about the new stuff.
Sure, absolutely. And how have you been in a relationship now for, is it 10 years, Becca?
Nine and a half years.
And how does your partner sort of deal with your kind of fame and your lifestyle? Or do you just go home and you're just sort of very normal?
I am very low-key when I go home. You know, she is so above and beyond all my shenanigans. She's really... I don't want to take this the wrong way, but very serious and focused on her own thing.
What does she do?
She works full time for two of our Buddhist oriented nonprofits.
Okay.
She, you know, the music business is all fun and games, but you know what she does is so above and beyond what I do. So, you know, she tolerates.
And how long have you been a Buddhist now?
10 years?
Yeah, 10 years or so. And how do you think that has sort of influenced your kind of music and creativity?
Well, I think it's influenced me beyond decipherability, actually. I think, you know, for the first 10 years, I think it contributed to my writer's block, like, because it really tears down all your conceptual thinking. And basically turns it upside down, and... Mm-hmm. I really just didn't really know how to respond to it. I didn't know, you know, and that's kind of why I went into a lot of cover material. I did the record with Tony. I did hymns. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of let me do albums without having to write. And I was studying a lot, so I, you know, cover records allow me to do a record fast without a lot of, you know, the work.
Yes.
So, you know, that sort of contributed, and also I think the introspection and the meditation and pondering, it really sort of also made me focus on my singing on a different way.
Hmm.
So I think that sort of explains the whole crooning years. And then, you know, I just think I've gotten to a place with my practice that I feel... I will never feel like I've actually gotten anywhere, really, because I'm a kind of a poor practitioner. But I have a good relationship with my practice now that sort of let me go back out into the world feeling really confident and really attached to the outcome of it, I guess. Mm. Although I would like this record to be successful, obviously. But
yeah.
I guess the neediness isn't there so much anymore.
K.D. Lang's latest CD is called Sing It Loud. She was interviewed by Rosie Wilby. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Ben Karen, Chris Wilson, and Rosie Wilby contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and the generosity of our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to become a supporter, subscribe to our CDs, and check out our podcasts, our blog, and our Facebook fan page. This Way Out can also be found on iTunes. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WRSU, New Brunswick, New Jersey, CFXU, Antigonish, Nova Scotia, Experiments FM, Ames, Iowa, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
Our Spring 2011 membership drive has just ended, and we want to thank you for your support of listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio. Your pledges really do make a difference for your station and your community. If you opted to pay via check, you will be receiving your envelope in the mail soon. Please, don't forget to pay your pledge. We depend on your pledges to stay on the air, and we determine when the next pledge drive happens based on pledge fulfillment. If you want to support KPFT, there is still time to do it. Visit kpft.org to make a pledge securely online for all the great music, news, and more. That's kpft.org to pledge online. If you love KPFT, here's your chance to ensure the station you love has what it needs to continue bringing you great programming. This is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
Widely seen as the channel of reference for coverage of the Middle East and Global South, Al Jazeera English can now be heard on 90.1 KPFT. Al Jazeera English has become a world leader in the coverage of Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Europe, and the Americas. You can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT FM and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Al Jazeera English has received many awards for its reporting. With a staff of more than 1,000 from 50 different countries, the aim of Al Jazeera English is to provide independent and impartial news for an international audience. Again, you can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Visit kpft.org for a complete program schedule. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Champagne. course, that was Lola by the Kinks from 1970, and this is J.D. Doyle and Queer Music Heritage. The theme of the show this month is Straight Artists, Queer Songs, the 1970s, and it's a continuation from last month when I focused on the 1960s. But there are some big differences. Last month I said I was selecting my music from the last decade before Stonewall, and that has a cultural significance, with the main impact being on the visibility of GLBT people. Not only did the music by them come out of the closet, especially with the advent of the women's music movement around 1973, but gays and lesbians were more visible to the general public. And that included straight songwriters, inspired by a new subject area or an area they were then much more willing to approach. Yes, many of these songs were novelty songs or with negative references, and some songs expressed that there should be acceptance. I'm giving credit to Lola by the Kinks for being the first big hit song with the GLBT theme. None of the songs I found for my 60s show that continued a gay theme throughout the song were hits. So when the song's narrator said, "Well, I'm not dumb, but I can't understand why she walked like a woman and talked like a man," he and L-O-L-A Lola were making history. Up next, another band from the UK and from 1970. On my 60s show, I did a long segment on the gay producers and managers who presented various bands to us. One of this group was Simon Napier Bell, and the artists he worked with ranged from Dusty Springfield, the Yardbirds, Wham, and many others. In 1970, he produced a band called Fresh, and their album called Out of Borstal was one of the first to be released on a major label, in this case RCA, to have songs dealing lyrically with homosexuality. Borstal is the name the English give their juvenile prisons, so perhaps that lent itself to the subject matter. From the album, I picked the song "And the Boys Lazed on the Veranda." And you'll figure out what they're doing. Here's the band, Fresh.
And the boys lazed on the veranda, watched by hungry eyes, never doubting the attraction of the sunburned thighs. Now you watch him point his finger, and the boy will come swaying gently for a purpose, sucking on his thumb. They're not for you, little girl. Watch him smiling, so obedient, no, he's not his son. Can't you see from the way he's standing what will soon be done? Now they're leaving the veranda for a quiet place. There's no reason to be uptight, it's quite commonplace. They're not for you, little girl.
the early 70s, David Bowie was going through his Ziggy Stardust phase, and he had already declared to the press that he was bisexual, which was just hype. Anyway, he had recorded the song you just heard, John, I'm Only Dancing, which was about a bisexual man dancing with a woman but telling his jealous male lover that there was nothing to worry about. John, I'm only dancing. She turns me on, but I'm only dancing. Something I didn't mention earlier when I was commenting on the huge increase of material for a show like this in the 70s compared to the 60s was that I found so much I wanted to share for this month that the show is 3 hours and could easily have been longer. It will cover all sorts of genres, and this segment will span 1970 through 1973. And also, I gave myself kind of a ground rule of trying to stay away from cover versions of earlier songs. Because, for example, giving you a male-to-male version of Da-Do-Ron-Ron isn't a commentary on gay life. It's just a cover. I'm going now to a band you've probably not heard of. It's by the London band Fickle Pickle. Their 1971 album was called Sinful Skinful, and while the song I'm playing is from those days, it showed up only as a bonus track on a recent compilation by them. It's called Sweet Wilfred Rodent of Note, which you'll see rhymes with homosexual stoat.
A little stoat, and he lives in an old oak tree. Round about 2:45, you'll see him taking tots to tea. He's very warm and wonderful, and he's almost
That short little song was from Todd Rundgren's 1973 album called A Wizard, A True Star. And he was telling his friend that to be gay, you don't have to camp around. This next song is by a totally straight band, the Kit Kats. They formed in Pennsylvania in 1961 and lasted about 10 years for what turned out to be their last 45 RPM record in 1971. Band member Carl Houseman wrote the song, and the lyrics were not at all typical with their music, or for that matter, for any band in 1971. Houseman was not gay, so what prompted this? Well, one night he and another band member went to see a performance of the Frisco Follies, a gay male drag revue. He enjoyed the show and at the end was particularly moved by what one of the performers said. She said, "Just remember, ladies and gentlemen, it's not who you love, it's not how you love, it's that you love." That, of course, inspired the song, and the more he thought about it, the more he felt, well, someone should speak up in defense of gay people. And he did. He had no problem with the dilemma that what if people thought he was gay? He just felt it was something that needed voiced, and the band backed him completely. Here's the Kit Kats and That You Love. Is the name of this next artist, and he was active in the early 70s in New Zealand, and he's been compared to Cat Stevens. And one of the songs got a reputation for being gay, though he didn't intend that. I know this because years ago, a friend sent me a clip of the artist talking about the song. Here's Lindsay Marks and his song, Son of the Sun.
Hi, this is Lindsay Marks. This is my song, Son of the Sun. It was initially written about two characters in the Bible, David and Jonathan, who were mates. I remember being on New Faces, and through I made it through to the second round, and I actually sang that song in the second round. And Phil Warren, actually, who was one of the judges, he came up to me later and he said, it's about homosexuals, wasn't it? And I said, well, I don't think it was. It was about Dave and Jonathan, actually, but it, and that kind of seemed to have grown, and a lot of people that I've spoken to more recently than have said that it meant quite a lot to them because they were gay, and I guess being gay in the 70s wasn't as easy, and that was kind of like a little public thing for them, even though it wasn't necessarily my intention in the first place.
Beside your side, I know I need you. You're my shame and you're my pride. I'll never leave you. I'm leaning on you, son of the sun. I would live if you should ever die, 'cause I believe you. When you say you'll be inside me when I need you, 'cause I love you, son of the sun. Do they say it's wrong? Do you think you'll leave me soon? It's just the same old song to a different sort of tune. Do they talk behind your back and do they cry out shame? It's just the same old love song to a different sort of name. Every day makes me love you more, and I don't want to love you. But if you're quiet, sure they keep the sun above you. While I'm still son of the sun.
Well, do you like boys? That was by the UK band Starbuck from 1973, and it was by the gay songwriting duo of Ken Howard and Alan Blakely, who I mentioned in my 60s show. Starbuck should not be confused with the Atlanta band who had the hit Moonlight Feels Right. And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you are listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from midnight to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Up next, I've got three black artists. Some of you may remember Jewel Akins for his huge 1965 hit, The Birds and the Bees. Well, in 1973, long after any recording success, two producers talked him into recording a song for the gay market. I interviewed Jewel Akins last August, and he says, no, he wasn't gay and just went along with it and didn't hear any more about it. He also didn't know that the producers ran a big ad in The Advocate, which is how I noticed it. For 1973, this is a very gay record. He's Good for Me.
Mama, when I was young, you taught me right from wrong. Now I'm grown, I must leave home. My true love has come on, on. And oh, Mama, he's so good for me. Told me to leave him. I love him so. Mama, love me too.
you can be seen. If you're thinking sick, well, now try to think. You better go and get yourself fixed. If you think you're well, 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 now what the hell now?
Joe Akins, Harrison Kennedy of the group Chairman of the Board sang Closet Queen, a fairly advanced song of acceptance. That was from his 1972 album Hypnotic Music. And then in the 1971 song Stop the World and Let Me Off, the vocalist for the group Flaming Ember complained about losing his woman to another woman. My general policy for selecting songs for these shows was not to include cover versions, but I have one I want to mention briefly. It's the old classic, Sally Go Round the Roses, a hit for the Jeanettes in 1963 and recorded by lots of people. I could have just as easily played this song on my 60s show with a version by Mitch Ryder, but this artist, Tim Buckley, in 1973, took it a step further, making the lyrics much more explicit, with his assertion that the saddest thing in this whole wide world is to find your baby been laying with another girl.
But I'm singing about Sally go round the roses. Sally go round the roses. Oh. Sally go round the roses. Oh. Laying with another girl. Oh, Sally, don't you go
tonight at the Freakers Hall. And you know, you're invited, one and all. Uh-oh. Come on, babies, grease your lips, grab your hats and swing your hips. And don't forget to bring your whips. We're going to the Freakers' Ball. Blow your whistle, bang your gong, roll up something to take along. It feels so good, it must be wrong. We're freaking at the Freakers' Ball. Well, all the fags and the dykes, they're boogieing together. The leather freaks are dressed in all kinds of leather. The greatest of the sanest and the masochists too. Screaming, please hit me, and I'll hit you. The FBI, dancing with the junkies. On the streets, swinging with the buggies. Across the floor and up the wall. We're freaking at the Freakers' Ball. Yeah, we're freaking at the Freakers' Ball.
Which way did he go? Which way did he go?
He went for Fago.
Well, the sweet goat was a heading through the mountains. The stage they call the Wells Fago Express. The cargo, so I hear, Fago old-fashioned root beer. That tasty drink with creamy head, what this? Look out, it's a hold-up. It's Black Bart.
Help, save me from my life of fear.
Oh, hush up, gal. It's that famous drink I want. That case of Fago old-fashioned root beer.
Stand where you are.
What's this?
Black Bart, you silly bitch. You are through.
It's the Fago Kid.
Madam, do not fear. I will save your Fago old-fashioned root beer.
This fag's gonna save his Fago. Ooh.
So the stagecoach went on heading through the mountains. And old Black Bart has now turned queer, I hear. The Fago Kid.
Which way did he go? Which way did he go?
He went for Fago.
He went for Fago old-fashioned root beer.
Dr. Hook, who finally did make it on the cover of the Rolling Stone, singing about the Freakers' Ball in 1972. That was a Shel Silverstein song, and I've got one by him in part three. And closing that set was an obscure band called Rocks Gang. Their 1973 album, Bring It Back Alive, included one called Fago Root Beer, a parody of a commercial by a root beer brand named Fago. I've got another strange record to share with you. It's from 1970 and was released on a 45 on the Capitol label in Canada. On my site, I show the very interesting picture sleeve they gave this 45. And what is almost as interesting is how tame the stereotyping is on both sides. Yes, the sissy voice is there, but the storylines are so ordinary, especially for that time period, you have to wonder why they thought enough of the record to give it a picture sleeve. It's a real collector's oddity. The artist's name, of course, is made up and actually sounds like a porn name. Anyway, here's Rock Harding and You Ain't Done Better Than Me.
In an old cafe, just the other day, why I found you. Once again, what I pictured, my two arms around you. But a honky-tonk for lonely guys is not where I thought you'd be. And you ain't done much better than me. I remember walking past this place when you were by my side. But I doubt if you could make it in the shape you're in tonight. Oh yes, I've hated you for leaving me, and I slowly drifted here. And you ain't done much better than me.
Thank you.
feel, man. Just turn me on. I remember walking past this place when you were by my side. But I doubted you could make it in the shape you're in tonight. Oh, I've hated you for leaving me. And I slowly drifted here. You ain't done much better than me. No, you ain't done much better than me.
Yes, another country song about mistaken gender identities. From 1971, that was Hell of a World by Howard Barnes. And here's one more by country artist Freddie Weller. He did quite well in the country market through the 70s, and on his 1973 album, Too Much Monkey Business, was an interesting song called Betty Ann and Shirley Cole.
Innocent and sweet, so it was said. She always read the Bible just before she went to bed. She never went out very much, no man in town could talk. Every man agreed that Betty had a pretty walk. She lived with her big sister Sue, who'd married Parson Brown. Of course they were respected in their friendly little town. No one ever questioned that she spent her time alone. Cause what a Christian does is no one's business but their own. Parson Brown prepared his sermon evenings after work. And Sister Sue would go to visit ladies of the church. That left just Betty Ann and Parson Brown alone at night. Ah, oh, but it's hard work and takes a while to get each sermon right. One weekend when the Browns had gone to visit some lost soul, up drove a long black Cadillac and out stepped Shirley Cole. Years ago, Miss Cole and Betty Ann were pretty tight, and no one thought it strange that she had come to spend the night. Time went by and they were seen together everywhere, and Betty Ann soon changed down to the way she wore her hair.
In church each Sunday morning, side by side, they'd kneel and pray. And it seemed that Parson Brown would just politely look away. Now bad news travels fast, especially in a little town. But still no one was sure what took the life of Parson Brown. Rumor has it his last breath cried out for Betty Ann. But at the graveside, she and Shirley Cole were holding hands. Oh, could it be there's some things even God don't understand?
This is J.D. Doyle, and again, this month I'm bringing you Straight Artists, Queer Songs, the 1970s. And this is a three-parter, with two more hours to be found on my site at queermusicheritage.com. And like I said last month, in no way am I implying that these are all the songs from the 1970s with gay references. They are just the ones I found interesting. I'm rounding out part one of this show with another classic song. It reached Billboard number 16 in 1973, but its fame has far surpassed that chart position. Get ready to join Lou Reed and Walk on the Wild Side.
Holly came from Miami, FLA. Hitchhiked away across USA. Plucked her eyebrows on the way. Shaved her legs and then he was a she. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. Candy came from out on the island. In the back room she was everybody's darling. But she never lost her head. Even when she was given head, she says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go do 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 do. Never once gave it away. Everybody had to pay and pay. A hustle here and a hustle there. New York City is the place where they said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey Joe, take a walk on the wild side. Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo, you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey sugar, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. All right. Ha. Jackie is just speeding away. Thought she was Jim Dean for a day. Then I guess she had to crash. Valium would have helped that fast. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls say, do 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 do. Thank you.
You've been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston, with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, and Jack Valensky, with contributing editors Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. The music heard on this program is provided by J.D. Doyle, who also contributes to the audio file segment of This Way Out and who produces Queer Music Heritage, which is an hour-long feature of Queer Voices the fourth Monday of every month. For more information, visit J.D.'s website at queermusicheritage.com. And listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Our Spring 2011 membership drive has just ended, and we want to thank you for your support of listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio. Your pledges really do make a difference for your station and your community. If you opted to pay via check, you will be receiving your envelope in the mail soon. Please, don't forget to pay your pledge. We depend on your pledges to stay on the air, and we determine when the next pledge drive happens based on pledge fulfillment. If you want to support KPFT, there is still time to do it. Visit kpft.org to make a pledge securely online for all the great music, news, and more. That's kpft.org to pledge online. If you love KPFT, here's your chance to ensure the station you love has what it needs to continue bringing you great programming. This is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
Widely seen as the channel of reference for coverage of the Middle East and Global South, Al Jazeera English can now be heard on 90.1 KPFT. Al Jazeera English has become a world leader in the coverage of Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Europe, and the Americas. You can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT FM and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Al Jazeera English has received many awards for its reporting. With a staff of more than 1,000 from 50 different countries, the aim of Al Jazeera English is to provide independent and impartial news for an international audience. Again, you can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Visit kpft.org for a complete program schedule. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
There are places you go to get the quick news.